This is Rachel Ojo here with Luis Ayala on May 31st, 2026. Luis and I just met outside of the library in Hudson, New York, and we are here in the community room of the library. And today's conversation is part of the oral history summer school, their community library of voice and sound, which is all about Hudson and its residents. Luis just put his phone on airplane mode, and so, Luis, will you please introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Luis Ayala Rivera. I'm a current resident of Hudson, New York. And yeah, that's my name and where I'm living right now.
Great. So, Luis, you say you're a current resident of Hudson. Growing up, where was home for you? What was that like?
Home was in Cabo Rojo, Puerto Rico, in a little project. They call it Caserio in Puerto Rico, the only one in my town, Cabo Rojo. And that's where I grew up from since I was born until around 17 years old. And I left that town to another town called Mayagüez, this next door to Cabo Rojo. And from there, my life, I moved from Cabo Rojo to Mayagüez. I was already 17 to going to turn 18. And that's when really my life started changing for the really, like, people know how Puerto Rico is. And if you grew up in a place that is no education, it is really hard to come out of there. And that's why, like, in my case, I'm a miracle. Because I went to prison, to juvenile, for years. I went to adult prison for years, and I saw stuff that, you know, a lot of people, they never gonna see in their life, you know what I mean? Like, it was like everything. I went through everything since I was like, let me see, everything is star for me for the wrong reasons. Everything in my life started going wrong, and when I was 11. At 11 years old, I started smoking. And, you know, the trend, going to school, and it was kids smoking cigarettes already over there. And they were looking like grown-ups. I was looking like a little kid, but they were, all the people over there, they were looking like grown-ups with beard and mustache and everything. And for some reason, we just want to simulate and imitate the next person, thinking school. And I started smoking cigarettes, I started smoking weed. And then for some reason, some people from another town, they came to our town with coke and weed to sell in our town, and I started selling at that young age. Like, imagine being 11 years old, 12, and selling drugs for, you know, months. And then after that, it was like about a year and a half, 2 years of selling drugs in the street. And I went to juvenile. My mom put me in juvenile. I was unstoppable, uncontrollable. And my mom, with the advice of my stepdad, because she didn't know what to do, my stepdad told her, you just gotta go to the DA and give up his custody. And say to the DA, I cannot deal with him, so take him. It's pretty much giving up your custody to the state. And they came to pick me up, and they put me in jail for a month. And in there, I was the youngest, I was little. And it was, like I say, it was people there, they looked grown-ups. At 15, 16, 17, they were looking like they were grown-ups already. And I was in there with them, in juvenile, in the juvenile facility in Cabo Rojo. It's a detention. And it was one of the worst. They call it detention, it was pretty much prison, and one of the worst prison. And at that age, being in there, it was a lot. And I got my face burned. They light up a plastic spoon, and the guy, he was throwing the melted plastic until he got onto my face and he burned my face and everything. Like when I went there, I saw from my mom, them saw me in the courthouse, and she broke down crying because she saw my face. It was burned and everything. And then she said, okay, I'm going to take him back. And the judge, I asked her, think about what you're going to do next time, because that's not a place for him. He's too little. And then when I got out, it was worse, because then I did all kind of drugs. Not for long, because then I went in for like about 2 years and a half. I did some robberies. I like to steal. In that time, I love to steal. When you broke and you don't have nothing, you see everybody with everything else, you know. I went in and steal everything that I could. They never got me. When I did it by myself. When I did it with my friend, that's when I got caught. We went into a house and he started shooting a gun. And the cop showed up. And he came out towards the cops. I'm running the other way. He came towards the cops. They got him. And they got me. And because I was more in the streets, they said, nah, he's not. He's not the one. This is the one, because they see me before. They know who I was. And they got me. They gave me 2 years and a half. And in prison, in juvenile, it's like it's worse than the adult. People think they're in there, they're okay. It's no rules. And it's really like the ignorance in between inmates in juvenile is ridiculous. Like it's completely out of control. Like you go there, and if you don't fight, you don't know how to fight, or you don't got a name from the street that they know, you're going to suffer. But because I was a really bad person outside, they knew who I was inside. Even though that they knew, I went through stuff. You know what I mean? But it don't broke me. I got out, and then I started working. And I did the 2 years and a half. I started working. And I started working in a printing company. They were printing shirts. I lasted there for like about 9 months. The guy pretty much, he was using me. He used me for like, wow, a lot. And I was 16 years, 17. And as soon the job ended, that's when everything went bad again. Like I was working. I came out and I said, I don't want to go back. Let me do this right. And I worked for 9 months. The name of the company was Ecstasy Print in Cabo Rojo. And the little, what do you call, like, how you call this? Like, it's not a project. It's more like a residential place where they got, you know, people in middle class. That's where the factory was. And the guy, he was mismanaged the money, and he ended up closing. He went bankruptcy, and I lost the job. And then a 17-year-old with criminal record, and people, they knew me. They were not going to give me no jobs in what I was. I went back to sell. I started selling marijuana, and it was not making it. And I started selling coke again. Somehow, the cops went into my house. They don't got the coke, but they got the weed. I ran from that. They got my mom. They took my mom to the police station. I went. I gave up myself, and they let me go. They say, okay, we're going to give you a citation for court, and you're going to see the case. And when they let me go, I left. That's when I went from Cabo Rojo to Mayagüez. And from that situation that it was bad, I went to worse, to sell heroin, coke, everything. I was not using anything because I got smarter. When I got out of prison, like I was not stupid like that. Like, okay, I'm not doing this. I was smoking weed, but that's it. And I started selling in that area, in Mayagüez, exactly in the projects on Candelaria in Mayagüez. It was three projects, Candelaria, Carmen, and, oh my God, Kennedy. Two of those, they're already demolished. When I went to PR like a year ago, they're already demolished, two of them. And in there, I don't know where, I just went in there and I said to the main guy, he was giving heroin for people to sell. Yo, give me some. And he knew me from juvenile. He said, here, you a crazy mother F. And I said, I guess. I say, I'm not going to say be careful because you got my stuff. So just anything happen, you say my name. And stuff happened. People came, yo, you're not from here. And they put me against the wall. You're not from here. And I'm like, I mentioned the name, Face. That was his name in Spanish. And I say, oh, boy, you're not from here. I'm selling his stuff. You selling his stuff. Pretty much we, his worker. And they let me be. I went from that town to another town, Buena Vista. That's when my sister's family lived. They were not my family. They were only my sister. My sister through my mother. So she got family through her father in Buena Vista. That's like a big hill. And they got a couple mountains. And that's where people live up there. And in there, I start selling again coke. And I was selling so hard that the cops showed up. And they got a package out of the stash. They say, arrest everybody. When they say arrest everybody, I run. I run like you never see anyone run before. Like my heels, it was touching my back, literally. Like my heels touched my back when I was running down the hill. They caught me. They beat the crap out of me. Like when I say they beat the crap out of me, my face, it was like this. They beat me up. It's a lot of corruption over there in Puerto Rico. The cops, the government, everybody's corrupt over there, pretty much. And they put me in prison. From there, they gave me 10 years and 7 months. Over there in Puerto Rico, it's a little different than here. When they give you that much time, you think you're going to do 10, but it's half. Because they count night and day. So, in reality, I just have to do 5.5. And I start working in prison, and I lower my sentence, like about 7 months. And I got out. In 2007, March 3, 2007, that's when I got out of prison from Puerto Rico. The CDO in Mayagüez, after 5.5 years. And I came here because my sister was here. All my family, pretty much, my direct family, my brother, my sister, my mom, they were here. My mom came here. First, it was my sister. My sister was married with my brother-in-law in 89 in Puerto Rico. And they split. And, like, I think it 15 years passed, and then she went back with him. No, it was not 15, but it was from 89 to 2000. 10 years, pretty much, 11 years. And he asked her, hey, you want to come here? She said, where are you at? In Hudson, New York. And she said, okay. And she came with 4 of her kids and no money. And she came here. And they were living in 21 Columbia Street. The first time that they lived here, it was 21 Columbia Street. Then my mom got sick, her kidneys. She got sick of her kidneys in Puerto Rico. And the doctor said, the best thing for you is to go to the U.S. because it's better medical attention over there. And then she came. She was the second one. Then my brother, he stayed over there at the apartment that my mom has in Cabo Rojo, and he did a robbery. And the National Grid, he went into the building and he took the safe out of it with one of their trucks, and he had to run here. He came to U.S., running from over there, and then he pretty much settled here. He started doing mechanic and all that. My sister started working on the factories and stuff, and I was in prison. In that time, because they came in 2000, I was supposed to come first, then all of them, because I was going to take care of my nephew. And the same day, no lies, the same day that I was supposed to come, they got me at 7 o'clock in the morning. And the same day I was supposed to come here, they got me. And it was like, I was supposed to be here in 2000. I got here in 2007. And my sister told me, you were so stupid. You got the ticket. You got everything. You was ready to come. And I'm like, it is what it is. It was not for me. And the 5.5 passed, and then I came here. When I came after my brother, I came to live with him in Stuyvesant. And he used to have a little shop over there. And then from there, I got together with a woman in Stuyvesant, and I moved to her house. From there, living with her, I went and I went out of control. I was not having money. I got fired from the job that I was doing in LKQ, and I robbed the jewelry store here in Fairview Avenue, 14K. I went and I jumped the counter, and I grabbed a bunch of jewelry from the wall, and I ran out. And they give me for that 2 years, two to six. 2 years, if I'm okay and I don't do anything in prison, they let me go. And then the 6 years in industry. But what happened? I did shock. That's a military camp. That you go there, if you do what you've been told and you finish the program, in 6 months you out. And then you do 1 year parole, and the people from shock tells the parole board you have to close the case. And that's what they did. Like, pretty much I finished the program with high honors, and I was 1 year. I had my apartment, I had my car, I had my job. I was doing perfect, no drugs, no marijuana. I was doing anything. And the parole hoteling, he called me early in the morning. I was sleeping because I was doing overnight. I was living in Philmont in the factory. I was working over there in the factory, and he called me. I woke up and I said, "Hey, yeah, but I said to him, the appointment is not today." And he said to me, "No, I'm not calling you for that. I know the appointment is in another week. You're not going to have to come anymore." And I was confused, and I'm like, "What?" He said, "They release you." And I said, "You say what? Parole release my case?" "Yeah. You did shock. You've been 1 year with no problems. You're working. You got your own apartment. It is no reason for us to keep you on paper." And they released me. And from there, I went to work in Apollice, if I'm not mistaken. Hold on. I went from the factory, yes, to Apollice. That's in Route 9. They have an axe factory there. And I went to work there for an Italian guy, and the guy is crazy because you see that I got a thick accent, and he said, "You're going to be the supervisor." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? You're going to bring people, you're going to hire people, you're going to fire people, you're going to be the boss." And I'm like, "Oh, no, I don't know anything about managing a business." He said, "But this guy quit. The other guy, he quit." And I hired all my family. I hired my sister, my brother-in-law, my nephews, three of my friends, and we was running the company for a year and a half. And it was great. The problem was that the guy, that's why everybody quit on him, because he was not paying. When he was supposed to pay you on Fridays, did he give you a payroll check and the check bounced? It was like, "Sir, you give me a bank check." "Oh, yeah, my bad. I give you the money on Monday." Monday, it was a Tuesday, Wednesday. That was when he came down from Long Island, come up, and give you cash. Like, he was completely crooked. Then from there, I quit, and I went to work for myself, doing mechanic, doing movings. And Sila got a U-Haul business that I was doing. That's what I got. I was doing the moving. And from there, my idea to get a tow truck, since I came to the United States, to have a tow truck, it was my main idea. I told my brother when he was working in his shop one day, and he told me, "You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know. You need a special license for this, and you're not going to be able to pay the insurance for the truck." And I said, "But you make the money. You put the money now, and you're going to make the money because you charge $200-$300 for a tow. So in 2 weeks, you're going to have the money." "Nah, you don't know what you're talking about." And I let it go because I didn't like to argue with people that they think they know more. So the idea went away under the bed for a long time. From 2011 to 2013, if I'm not mistaken. No. I'm lying. From 2013 to 2019. I was doing the work, the moving mechanic for people and all that, but it was not working. People, you fix a car for people and they think they got a warranty for life, and you have to pick them up, drop them off, and sometimes you got to give them a break with the parts, like everything. It was like, are you seriously, you're going to tell me all this? And I'm doing a job. And I quit. I decided to quit. I'm saying, I'm not going to do mechanic no more. I'm going to transition. I start junking because the metal went up in the COVID time. When it was COVID, the metal went up. I was buying cars for like about $200-$300 each one, and I was selling it for $600-$700. I was doubling my money. I was junking 2-3 cars a day. Everybody selling their car, and I'm selling it to the junkyard. The business went so good that I said, okay, now I have the money for the tow truck and the insurance. I went and bought an old tow truck in 1993 for $10,000, and the guy brought it to me and everything. I put the name Mandingo Towing. I opened the LLC and I started towing, and I got on the tow list for the police. For the Hudson PD, I got in first. It was a little harder for the state police to get in for some reason. I got in the Hudson PD. It was just in 1 month because it was nothing they could say no. I got the tow truck. I got the impound lot. I got everything. So why are we gonna say no? The state troopers, they took a long time. They took 9 months for the application. For other people, they take 2-3 months. For mine, they took 9 months. And I tried to get on the sheriff list for the sheriff department, but what happened? Because it's the sheriff department, it's the sheriff department. You know, like they decide who goes in and who goes out. Like, in other words, they control pretty much what I do. And even though they have to give the opportunity to everybody, they will never give it to me. They say no to me. Multiple times, too.
Why do they say no?
I'm going to be honest with you, and I know people hate when I talk about it. I know you are a woman of color, but it is 110% racism. Control and power. Like, these people, they know who I am. I was in their jail, but they cannot recognize that a person like me had so much success in their town, because I got a house, I got sport cars, I got bikes, I got quads, and I don't got one house, we got multiple houses. And they know, and they despise, they hate the fact that I'm so successful in their town when they still renting and they have an old car or an old truck. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not from here. I'm not supposed to make it here. That's why they've been saying no to me, even though that I met the requirements. That's something that I love New York, but that's something that I don't like about this area. Oh, I guess it's everywhere. But here is more strong, the racism towards black people and Hispanics. And the blockage, how they block you from getting jobs to do business, it is completely insane how they do here in this town. This town pretty much is in a lockdown. The way they move, it make you get out of here. Like me, pretty much in 2027, I'm going to get out. Like, it's no way I'm going to stay here. Like, the school, the same thing. You look at the school, they got one black teacher, one. They have they put a superintendent. You know what they did? They all team up to get her out. And the school board, it was 3 black people. Go and see if it's one left. And that's all the teachers. They team up to get Sila out of it. Sila was there. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Sila before. Can you tell us more about her and who she is?
Sila is my woman, the woman that I've been with for the last, let me see, since 2013, it was, 2013, that's when we got together, And yeah, I've been together with her since then. And I've been with that woman doing it. Yeah. And trying to survive in this rough world. And that's the woman that I've been with.
How did you meet?
We meet up, so she knew my brother because through mechanic and stuff. Her aunties used to go to my brother to get the car fixed, and she got an idea who I was. And then somehow her husband ended up working in my place in Apple Ice. And this guy, he was the biggest non-worker person. I don't like to talk bad about him because his kids are pretty much my kids too, you know. And I don't like to talk bad about him. But he didn't like to work, and I just fired him. And eventually, somehow, Sila, she said to me, "Oh, I like you." And I'm like, "Okay, what's up? I like you." And she asked me for a kiss. I gave her a kiss. And then from there, we went out. And then she said, "Oh, I want to be with you." And I said, "I don't want to be with nobody." And she said, "Oh, you a player. You a player. You this, because I like to be with no shirt. When I'm in my house, I take my shirt off and I'm with no shirt." And she, "Oh, you a player. You this, you that." And I say, "I'm not." And we end up together. And I guess because she work and I work so much, we match. And that was the little story with Sila. They've been together like, 11 years, going to 12. Yeah, we got a beautiful daughter out of the relationship, Carmen Lucia. She's completely in my face. Beautiful daughter that we have. And yeah, that's Sila. Right there in my little family that I got with her, I pretty much took her kids with me, you know. Some of them, they like me. Some, you know, not everybody is the perfect cup of tea, Louis. But, yeah, the one of them, Cruz, is like, he's following what I'm doing and all that. Like right now, just yesterday, we delivered the first order from a business that I start. Building picnic tables. I started it working for someone on Front Street here in Hudson, Farmers and Son. They asked me to rebuild some tables, picnic tables. I rebuilt them and I looked at them and I said, "Oh, I can do this." And Sila said, "Do it. We can sell them." And I said, "Let's see." And Sila was connected with the town pretty much. She was the tourism board person. And she knew some people, and they were looking for contracts to buy picnic tables for outside. And that was in COVID, you know, when the social distance and all that crap happened. We built like 20 tables. We was doing 10 tables. We did 10 tables in 3 days, me and him. And I showed him everything. You gotta do it like this, like that. You gotta sand it. You gotta make sure you cannot skip steps. You gotta do it like this, and that way people talk about it. They're gonna say the tables are pretty like strong. They don't like the ones at Lowe's or Home Depot and all of that, you know, and it's built by hand. And they're gonna meet the person that built the table. He did 3 tables by himself and he finished it, and he did exactly how I done it, you know, that he learned. And that's one of my favorites, you know. I love all of them, but, you know, some of them, they do stuff. It's like, come on, I'm not your father. You got to be considerate that I'm not your father and you disrespect me. Don't do that. And, yeah, that's some little story with them. Yeah. What else?
Well, you mentioned your sister, your brother, your mom are here.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your immediate family along with the family you're building.
Well, my mom, she passed away in 2007. I was only here for 3 months. Pretty much she passed the last 5 years fighting for me, waiting for me to come and see her for the last time, because that's exactly what happened. she got a bunch of heart attacks. And they bring her back, bring her back. The last time she got the heart attack, the doctor say, I bring her back, break her rib cage, pierce something, and then she gonna be vegetable or it's gonna get worse. Like, and then my sister decide to pretty much let her die. You know what I mean? Like, it was like that. Like, I got there and she was already at 38%. Like, almost died, almost dead. When I, she was not up on anything when I got there. And then she passed in 2007. Then because my brother, he was in love with the woman that I was. This is how it happened. I got here, my brother, he was working at the junkyard, and he loved that woman. She was working in there, Puerto Rican woman named Dina. And he wanted to go out with her. He just have a baby with his woman. And she said, yo, you just have a baby with your woman and you want to cheat and come out and go out with me and all that? No. He talked so much about me in the junkyard that she already made her decision. Without knowing me, without seeing me or anything, she just hear my the stories, the stuff that I did in Puerto Rico, and because of that, and it's no good stories neither. It was only the drugs, the running, the fighting. And when I came, I was working in a car, inside in a car, and she came in. I remember she had a white suit, a white sweats, and I'm like, who's that? And my brother put face, and I'm like. In Spanish, yo, ¿qué te pasa? What happened? Oh, what that whore doing here? And I say, who? Dina. And when I look, yeah, she's here. What's up? She came to see you? No, I don't talk to her. She came to me, hey, I can't wait. I could not wait to meet you. And I'm like, oh, wow. I'm looking at her from top to bottom. I'm like, oh, wow. And I'm like, I'm not your type. And she say, here, I give you, I brought you a gift. She gave me a keychain from Puerto Rico. And I'm like, okay, I got it. And then she said, you're going to give me your number? And I said, I don't have a cell phone yet. And I said, as soon as I get it, I give it to you. And she said, okay, I'm going to give you mine. And I said, okay, thank you. I asked my brother for his phone, and he said, no. He said, I'm not going to give you my phone to call her. Don't even call her. And I said, you cannot tell me what to do. And that was one of the reasons why I left too. So fast from my son, my brother, because he thought that for some reason he thought that he was gonna tell me how to live my life, and I was already 24 years old, and he's 26. Like, you know, that older, you know, that experience, and you be a knucklehead too in your life. And he was trying to tell me, oh, you know, don't go out with her because you like her. No, no, it's not that. Okay, and what it is then? Oh, it is nothing. And I said, so I'm going to go out with her. Oh, I brought you here and you're going to do shit like that. And I'm like, no, sir, I'm not doing anything. Oh, that, I first dips on her and this. Oh, that's what it is. Okay. So, but bro, you lost because she told me that she didn't even look at you. And I went out with her a couple of times and she asked me. She said, you want to move with me? And I say, oh, you want me to pay your rent? No, you don't have to pay rent. And I said, I pay, but what it is, why you want me to move so fast? We've been going out for like a month and a half. I cannot be by myself. And I said, but I miss you with somebody before. She said, no, but it's like, I want to be with you. Since your brother talked about it, and he was in the lunchroom, and he said your name and all the stuff about you, I was in love. And then that you have a cell phone in prison, and you was talking on the phone with him, and I'm like, that excite you? Like, that make you excited? Yeah. Okay. And I got together with that woman. I was with her for like about a year and 2 months. And though, somehow, at the junkyard, they start messing with me and calling me names and making my work harder than what it was. Like, if I was taking cars apart, if I got to take a car apart, two cars a day, they give me a really hard one. They would be a foreign car. The foreign cars, like Mercedes-Benz, BMW, those cars, they're really hard to take apart. It takes more time than American car. I can take apart 3 American cars in one day. But the foreign car, I can take only one. And I cross them out. I was still with the mentality that you don't F with me and you're not going to tell me anything. If I have to go, I go. And I cursed the supervisor out because he was the one. He got his hand in it. He was Rick Smith. I want to say his name. That way he stays here. And he remembers who I am. And I hope one day he hear this. And, bro, I'm doing really well. Way, way better than you right now. That was one of the people. They put rocks in my path. And, like, it was one of those. Like, I don't like you. And because I don't like you, I'm going to make your life miserable. He was one of those. And they fired me from that job. I was making good money. And I went crazy. I still have mentality, you know, ignorant and stuff. And that's when I went to the 14K in 2009. And I stole $99,000 in jewelry out of the wall. That was crazy, though. Cops say, I don't even know how you got so much, man. But you got like almost 3 kilos of jewelry. Kilo and a half. 3.5 pounds of jewelry. How you got grabbed so much in 4 seconds? Say, we look at the camera and you will see behind the corner, 4 seconds. You jump, grab, and jump back. And they got me. I got caught. I went to prison. I did shock. And from there, they released me. I got the tow truck. With the tow truck, I bought everything that I got. I bought a brand new car, a BMW. I bought a Dodge Challenger. And I did everything that I want, really. I got the house. If I die, it will be for my daughter. Beautiful house that I have right there. Patty Howard. And from there, that's it. That's pretty much a recap of my life until May 31, 2026. Let's see what I'm going from here.
You know, I'm thinking about your mom and how she... what she experienced with you in Puerto Rico and the short time you're together here. What do you imagine she would think of your life now?
She would be really happy. She would be really happy. What happened with my mom was she didn't have no education. My mom, my grandmother died when my mom, she was only 10 years old. And some family grab her and say, you're going to stay here and you're going to clean and you're going to stay quiet. I'm pretty sure she got abuse and everything. I'm pretty sure. I'm 100%. I don't know because nobody told me anything about her life or anything. I barely know about her life. But the stuff that I know is that she was pretty much abused, not educated and stuff. Like when she was raising us, she lost a lot of control. Like, she lost control. Like, one day we was, me and my brother, I remember this, I will never forget this. We was building a wrestling arena with wood and nails that we found in the construction next to the projects. And we was banging early in the morning, Saturday, banging, bam, 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 building it, putting little strengths around it because we got 2 action figures that we got from the cereal box. And my mom woke up, pick up the what we was building, smash it on the floor, and she yelled out, cursing in Spanish, oh, I'm tired of you, mother F, I hope you die, and this and that. Like, my mom, she loved us, but at the same time, it was, like, weird because I don't understood that rage. When she used to beat me, she beat me up with rage, like, and then hit me in my face. Like, I think you cannot hit a kid in the face. Like, hit him with punching. Hit him in really hard. And it's like, why? You know, what anger you getting off that you have to beat me like that? Even if I do really bad stuff. And that was one of the things that really, people say, oh, that don't push you to do stuff. It did. It did. Like, when she beat me, I really feel like after this, what it is? Nothing. I was scared of nothing. Like, I was pretty much scared of nothing. Not the police, nothing. Like, I was doing everything. and nobody could stop me. And that's one of the things that I think I learned, because I yell a lot, but to hit my daughter, I don't hit her. And I don't hit my stepkids, none of my stepkids. I never hit them, like never. You know what I mean? And I learned from my mom that situation, that you cannot be hitting people with rage, and then your kids too. It's like your kids, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. You know what I mean? Hitting it really hard in front of people. Like, that was the most crazy stuff that I experienced with my mom. And people say, oh, you cannot blame it on her. She don't got education. That's why now I see it more, a little bit more like, okay, I guess. You know what I mean? But we have a choice, because I could have been like my mom. You know what I mean? And beat the crap out of my daughter every time she do something. And she do everything that she deserves to get a little whip. But I don't do it. I talk to her. I punish her. I take stuff away from her. Because if Bennett do nothing to me, the beating, what are you going to do to her? She going to do what she going to do no matter what. What I'm going to hit her. There's no reason for that. That's why, you know, it was good days with my mom, but it was a lot of days that it was like, you know, she liked to drink. She used to drink and go out with my stepfather. We stay in the car for hours, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, in the car, hungry like a mother. And it was like, wow. You know, I remember those days. I can go exactly the places that she go. And it was like, you know, these mediocre bars. They smell like pee when outside, and the doors are always open, and you got one guy, and you got like seven guys sitting in the bar, and two old women. That's the bars that she used to go, and the music really loud. If we was trying to sleep in the car, we couldn't. And then Puerto Rico's hot. Like, it was hard. And sometimes it was like, you know, why? You know? That's why I look at my life now. I'm like, I look back and I say, wow. Like, it's completely different, you know?
Can you tell me about one of the good days with your mom?
Oh, wow. I guess just when celebrating my brother's birthday. That's it. My brother's birthday was in December 24th. And every year they celebrate his birthday for some reason. In that time, it was money to do a birthday, buy beer, buy food, and buy everything for some reason. That's why my childhood got really marked, because my birthday was never celebrated. It was September 24. For some reason, it was never celebrated. It was like that. I remember two times it was birthday cake for me. That's it. One birthday cake, happy birthday, and have a nice day. I never have anything that, you know, like a gift for my birthday, and I have that. And then the Christmas, that was one of the worst times for me too, because Christmas, she bought stuff that pretty much we didn't want it, you know. It was stuff that I'm going to buy this and that's it. And then you see all the kids with the nice stuff that you see the commercial on TV, and I didn't have it. It was like, wow. It was a traumatic childhood for me, pretty much. It was not, like, it was really not a lot of days that I can say it was good. You know what I mean? Like, not really. It was more yelling and, don't do this, I'm gonna beat you up. And then the way my mom used to talk, it was like, she say all the curse words all together in one phrase to you know, to direct the talk to me. It was like, mother F, I hate you, Sarah, my F, like all together. And then, you know, F, listen. And I'm like, the last time that I speak to her and I said it to her, I said, what I'm going to listen to you when the only thing coming out of your mouth is bad words and you don't talk And she like, I don't have to have talk. I can yell at you all I want. And I said, you know what? And I left. I left my house. I was 17 years old. And I left because I was running. But I said, I will never go back to live with you. And I never went. I never went. I was like, that's it. It was not. That's why people ask me, oh, you want to go back to Puerto Rico? For what? For what I'm going to go to Puerto Rico? And all my life in Puerto Rico, all my life it was suffering. Even when I was selling drugs and I was making thousands of dollars, I was still suffering. Because in that life, you get caught one time and you're not going to get a penny out of that. Everything's going to be gone in no time. They go back to Puerto Rico? Nah. To visit? Yeah, I visit my family, my aunties, my grandfather is still alive, but to live, I will never go back to live. Maybe Florida. 2027.
Okay, Florida. You recently went back to Puerto Rico. How was that visit, seeing family?
That was the third time going. And every time I go, I found more reasons not to go. Like, I went around, and I have time to go around the projects and all that. And I look at the people. I looked around. I don't know nobody. So, like, 30 years later, I don't know nobody in there. And then it is no business to be making Puerto Rico. I would not make half of it, what I make here. I asked a tow truck guy, how much you charge me from Mayagüez to Cabo Rojo? And he said $65. I say, yeah, I will never come back to Puerto Rico. Never. I got a little idea that, oh, maybe if the tow truck is good, I buy another tow truck, bring two tow trucks here, and do it in Puerto Rico. When he told me, for that kind of tow, I charge $400. When he said $65, I say, yeah, I cannot come to Puerto Rico. I said it to him. I say, you know how much I charge in U.S. for that? Oh, it's different, bro. And I'm like, still, bro, $65? Say, wow, man, you gotta be starving. No, man, I make my money. How? To change a tire of those is $500. Oh, no, but they last. I say, okay. They don't last me, though. I drive a lot, and they don't last me, you know. And I say, nah, now investigate. Florida's more suitable for me. I just want a warm weather. New Jersey was good with the business and all that, but the weather is like, we're still in May and it's 40 degrees last night. In the morning, it was 40 still. Yeah, I don't want to be here no more.
Do you have family in Florida?
Nope. Mm-mm. I don't got no family in Florida. My sister is in Tennessee. My nephew's in Tennessee, then I got a nephew, my niece. Two of my nieces are in Tennessee with the mama and one of my nephews. And then I got another nephew in Delaware and then another one in Australia. He left to Australia a couple years ago. And then my sister here, she lives in Scalacore. She's moving to Puerto Rico in July, June, I think, or July. She's moving. She don't want to stay here no more. And then I got a couple of nephews around here, too, and nieces.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting to me how you know so much about your nieces and nephews and the growing family. Are you connected with them? How do you relate with them?
Well, I'm not really connected with them. Like, we say hi, if it's a gathering, yeah, we go, but it's not like that. I talk more with my sister. My two sisters, I talk to them almost every day. But we don't got no connection, really, me and my nephews, because sound arrogant, but I know a lot. And to them, what I know is not, for them, it's like, oh, he thinks he knows everything. Well, you look at your life and let's look at mine. And who knows more? You know, you look, you will see like the difference, you know what I mean? And they don't like that, you know? They don't like it. They don't hate me, but they don't like to be, they call, the family told me the other day, I'm Sila's family. You're like an alpha male, but like a bad alpha. Because even her family, the men in her family, I make them look small. You know what I mean? Because I do carpentry, I do towing, I do pretty much mechanic. Like, I can take a car apart, put it back together, and it will run. You know what I mean? Like, I do it a lot. And because I don't do it for free, you know, a lot of people, too, they, you know. It's like, I got a lot of people that don't like me because of that. I started the business with the tow truck, and believe it or not, people think that I'm going to do it for free. I know Louis because they know me. It's like, he's not going to charge me. A guy told me that. He said, yo, I thought you was going to charge me nothing. And I looked at him. I looked at my friend that he was with me, and I'm like, did you hear this guy? I said, why you not going to pay for my job that I just did for you? It's like, you call me, you say, yo, can you build a stairs in the back of my house? And then I'm going to tell you, it's free, bro. Don't pay me. What are we doing? Oh, but it's just a toe. It can be that I'm cutting the toenails in your feet, bro. And you have to pay. What are you talking about? And he's like, oh, man, but my stepson, Cruz, he was going to the gym. His friend ran into a pothole in the old ShopRite. Popped two tires. They call me, so I go. I pick up the car, put it on the truck. It's going to Casco 200. And he looked at me like I was retarded. Like I was, I don't know, like he saw a shadow or something. And he, yo, I don't got money. And I'm like, I look at my steps and I'm like, Cruz, what's going to happen here? Because did he think I'm going to do it for free? Like, because you my son? Oh, boy. Bro, it's not free. Bro, I don't got money. He called his mom. His mom said, yo, drop the car. I said, okay, I want to drop it. Don't worry about it. And I dropped the car and I didn't tow it. They thought I was going to tow it. And I said, no, I'm not towing it, bro. You got to pay like everybody else. And that's one of the things that have in business, that friends that people call friends, they going to push you away because you don't do it for free. You know, oh, he's going to charge me. But they go to the next guy and they pay full price. But your friend, I cannot pay to my friend. I can pay to his competition, but to my friend, I cannot give no money to my friend. My friend cannot make no money out of me. And I push a lot of people because of that. And that's one of the reasons why I want to leave too. Like, I just got tired of a lot of people here. And the police too. The police, the sheriff department, they blocked me, and like, they do stuff to me, and I got the proof. But me going to sue them and do this, do that, for what? Why I'm going to waste my time and energy on them? They're going to fall with their own way. Like, they've been falling. Like, I don't care about them anymore.
I'm curious, you mentioned people not wanting to do business or pay their friends, pay you. Mm-hmm. But you also mentioned a friend that you were with. So who are your friends here? Who are you going to miss when you leave?
Man, I will be lying to you if I say that I'm going to miss anyone. In my life, I went through, like, I got friends before, and then I realized that it's just not, it's not even, the word friend to me is like a word that was made up by humans, because it's just people that you know, and it's going to be people, they're going to come in your life and go, and pretty much all my life being like that. The only people that don't go away is my family. That's why I say, oh, the family is everything. Yeah, it is, because after everything is family, no matter what, it's your blood. Like, I have friends that we was like so cool. Like, we share drinks, we play basketball, we was good friends. Now I found those friends in Facebook and I write them, yo, what's up? They don't even answer. And I know they read it. Because if you active, you saw that message. They don't even ask, they don't even care. So I guess because I'm successful, they don't want to contact, you know? Like a guy that I know, Giovanni, he was my neighbor when I was a kid. We was little. And I reached out. He's in New Jersey. He said, yo, what's up? He didn't answer. And then I asked another friend, the one that I went to prison when I was a juvenile, Milton. I asked, yo, what happened with Giovanni? Oh, well, he's not going to answer you. He's cracked out. He's in drugs deep. And I said, well, he's always on Facebook. Yeah. Trying to rob people. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. And I said, well, that's why I don't get attached to friends. And I will not miss anyone here. Like, I will not. You know? I will not. I don't think I will miss anything here. Maybe if I don't make the same money, that's it. That's what the only thing I will miss, the work. The money that I'm making. Because I go to Florida and I don't make the same, you know, it's the same life. It's the same amount of money you gotta pay in America. I don't wanna fail over there and anything goes bad. But definitely live in this town and living for good. They will never see me back in here. And I know they will be happy. A lot of people. The wholesome pity, they will be really happy not to see my face never again. And I want to do that. I want to make your life happy. I want to help you out. Just go away. Yeah, friends is a thing that... Do you have friends? Because I got people that I know. That's it. It's not something that I consider, like, it's not for me. You know, I was like that before. Oh, friend here, friend there, friend there. And then I realized, yo, he don't even talk to me anymore. I have female friend in Puerto Rico that we smoke, we went out, we did everything together. I asked her for her brother. We was friends. And she didn't even answer me. But then 2 days later, she put on Facebook, oh, I'm pissed off with life. I don't like this. I don't like that. But, oh, so she saw my message. Why they don't answer? Then I talked to my sister in Tennessee. And, oh, yeah, I was talking to Brenda. Wait, what? Why they don't? And I asked my sister, Magda, I want to ask you one question. What the F don't people answer me? Like, it's not only her. I wish out to old friends, like old people that I knew from back in the days. They don't ask them. And they on Facebook. Like, you can see the green light when somebody's active and somebody's doing something on Facebook. They on it. No. They don't even answer. And I'm like, wow, what I did to them? I don't know. Because that I remember, I left, you know, the town, and we were cool when I left. Like, nobody pretty much.
What did she say?
My sister say, I don't know, because we was talking fine. Like, we was in the caserio back in the days. And I say, yo, she didn't answer me. And I want to ask her what happened with her brother. I know he's dead. But I want to ask exactly what happened. Like, you know what happened, but she didn't answer me.
I'm curious if there's anything else that we haven't touched on that you'd like to talk about.
Like?
That you want to talk about.
Not really. That's a really a good recap of my life. And a couple stories in it.
I'd love to know, you know, thinking about your daughter and Sila moving to Florida, what do you hope for them in this move and moving forward?
Well, I don't know, because she want to move. The baby doesn't want to move. But it's not what she say. Come on, Lucy, I'm going to go with Papa. So, I don't know, because, you know, It is not what they can get out of it. You say what they can get out of it?
What you hope for them.
What I hope for them? Okay. Oh, I'm going to give them what I'm giving here. Protection And that's it. That's what I do. It's going to be the same thing, you know? I'm going to be with them and work. Try to make life better. Like I've been doing it here.
You've lived such a full life and have so many experiences. What drives you? What do you hold on to? Who was a mentor or someone that helped guide you?
Well, it was nobody. My father died when I was 4. And, I guess he got killed. He got killed for $400. And what it really drives me is that I was hungry. I was in PR, and I know what is being hungry and have nothing, with dirty clothes, shorts that barely fit you, broken socks, all hairy with your hair not done, looking like crazy. And then I look at the mirror in those days when I had nothing, and it is no way that if I can walk and I can move my hands, I'm gonna sit down to cry my ass that I don't have it and I want it from the government. That would never happen in my life. Like, sit down and government, give me. Oh, give me food stamp. Give me this. Give me that. And I don't want nothing. I'm going to go get it. And that's the way I am. All my life, since I was a kid, before I start doing all that stuff, I was dumping garbage for people. I go with nothing. Just, can I dump your garbage? And they will give me 10, 15 cents. And that's how I start. And I got that ethic work, you know, really hard into me. Like, I didn't want nothing hand out. I want to work for it. And then I'm handy. I learn really fast. And, like, I know how to draw and do a lot of stuff. And I say, it's no way having all this talent that I'm going to be doing nothing. Like, when you call me, believe it or not, I was changing a water heater tank at my house. After in the morning, I took out the valve cover gasket of a Honda Cross Tour that I bought like 2 days ago. I'm gonna fix it and resell it. After that, I went ate breakfast and I went down because we got a B&B upstairs that we're finishing, and the old tank, the hot water runs out quick. It's an old tank from 1999, and I put a new one. When you called me, I was just finishing. And I say, 5 minutes. That's why I smell like the grease. When you clean your hands, it's a really strong smell.
So you're kind of a self-made man, would you say?
Yeah, 100%. Like, no one can say, oh, I gave him this, I did this for him. They cannot say, nobody. Like, nobody. You know what I mean? I go get it. I go do it myself. I don't wait for anyone to do anything for me. Like, I was looking for people to do my backyard. I got a drop of like 130 feet behind my house. It's really stiff. And then it's the pond. We got the pond, and I want to do stairs going down. It's a really long stairs. It's a lot of work. Just to pick up the wood from Lowe's, it was a workout for me. Because it's 2x10x16. They weigh like 120 pounds. And I was, you know, it's 8 of them. I picked them up and I brought it to my shop, to the house, to the garage. I told the guy like about 3 days ago, come pick up this metal in my house. He still don't get it. So I'm going to load it with the other metal I got in the other house, and I'm going to sell it myself. I'm not waiting for anyone. I just go get it and do it myself. And he's not going to make it. It's like about $140, $170 in metal. I'm giving him the metal for free. So I'm giving him $170 and he don't pick it up. So that's the people that makes me work harder. Because it's no way that people giving me stuff for free, I will get it right away. They got their priorities are messed up. That's why I have so much success. Because at 2 o'clock in the morning, they call me, hey, I need a tow. I'll be there. Give me 20 minutes. When they hear the time, oh my God, 20 minutes. Like, if you go on Google and look at the reviews of Mandingo Towing and Service, I got 3 bad reviews. Impound for DWI, impound for not having license, registration, and inspection, and the same thing, the last two. The third one, he knew me. He lived right here on Columbia Street. Jarrell. I'm going to say his name, and that way if he's hear this, he can hear that I talked about him. Jarrell, you ate a bee, okay? You a little kid. So, but I still got you $500, and I went to Florida and I spent it all, bro. So now you know. It's going to be there forever. Yeah, he was one of them, and like, my reviews on my business, it was great. You know what I mean? And you can tell that I'm a go-getter, because if 44 people saying that this guy's great and he's helpful and respectful and he helped me out, 3 people are not going to take it away. That's what a Chinese guy told me. I went to tow a G-Wagon for a Chinese guy, wealthy guy from Copac, and he said to me, I read your reviews. You're a good man. You're helping the young lady in the snow. You know how they talk with their accents. And I'm like, yeah, man, she was trending. The police called me, the sheriff. That's the thing, you know, the sheriff called. Hey, you're supposed to pick up this girl. Oh, now you call me when nobody want to come out? Oh, excuse me? Nothing, bro. I'll be there in a couple minutes. The Chinese guy said to me, yo, your reviews make people call you. Because if I was not going to call anyone else after I saw your reviews, that you helping people and late at night, you take them to the train station, like, you a good guy. And he gave me $20 tip. And like, people like that, people give me tips. And I'm like, it's my company. This money's for me. No, 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 no. You deserve more. You a good person. And I say, I guess, man. Yeah.
What a legacy that you're leaving with Mandingo. How did you pick that name?
Oh, so that name came up because I was pushing a car by myself one day with my ex-house. And she came out and she started yelling out, oh, you think you're the big Mandingo pushing cars, this and that. And I looked at her, yeah, I'm a big Mandingo. I just moved it. And she like, stop doing that. You're going to hurt your back. And I said, whatever. So years passed, and then we sit down, me and Sila, we sit down, and she say, what name you gonna pick up? Because it gotta be a good name that people gonna remember. And I say, Mandingo. I say, why Mandingo? Because Mandingos are super strong, and that's why I consider my company is a strong company to go to the job, no matter what. And people get confused what a Mandingo is, and I love it because they hear Mandingo. I say, sir, go on Google and Google the Mandingo and the Mandi tribe, and then you talk to me. So right now, we're going to stay quiet about the subject. Go and do that for me. And after you do that, you go and put a good review in my Google. And they're like, okay, I'm going to check. And then they check. They go and check it. They see me later. Oh, yeah, okay, I guess. That's how they call the guys from that tribe in Africa. Yeah, that's right. It is nothing they use here in America. And that's what I used it. And I used it too because I knew the cops, they have to call. And when they call, like if they call a tow truck company, they call City Body, Joe Palumbo, you know what I mean? Birch, you know what I mean? Mandingo. And they hate it. But they have to call me Mandingo. On the radio, when they call, they have to say, Mandingo Towing, come and get this car. It cannot be Luis. Luis can be anyone. Like for record. For the record, have to be Mandingo Towing LLC. You know what I mean? And they don't like it. They hate it. And I love it. Because they hate it.
Well, Luis, it's been an honor to sit with you today.
How much money I get for this? I'm joking.
I really appreciate the time you took to share with me about your life. Any other things that you want to share?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.